And now, the time fight fans all across the globe have been waiting for. It's the main card with your man, The Voice. As always, in opposite corner, my mano y mano, my verbal sparring partner, Philly's finest, Wildress Ruffin. What's going on, Ruff?
Feeling good, boys. I'm feeling good. It's another amazing week. Let's talk about the best in combat sports. It doesn't get any better. I'm excited to be here. But, of course, I'm here because the man, the myth, the legend, the man with his own T-shirt. You see the halo above his head. But
no halo today. No, don't come for me. No halo today.
You still got the Bruce Leroy glow going on right
okay.
now.
Okay, I'll take that.
So I see it. How you doing, Kevin?
Oh, man. It's smoke o'clock, man. So I am wonderful. Every time it's smoke o'clock, get to talk about these fights and even talk a little pro wrestling. You know, I'm excited.
Don't do that. Don't say it like that. I see how you're saying it. It was definitely a great weekend for a great weekend coming up for combat sports in general. We got a lot to get into, so let's not even waste any more time because I'm excited to talk about everything we're talking about. Let's go ahead and get into these KOs and low blows.
All right, let's get into KOs and low blows, kicking it off with super kicks and drop kicks and all other kicks. We're going to talk about WrestleMania 40. You are the wrestling expert. Like, you, these wrestlers, you know, a number of them, you know, personally.
Right.
Touch on the importance of Cody's story being completed.
Oh, man. Cody Rhodes finishing his story is literally a culmination of, you can really say 2 years, but it's really probably like a 30-year journey. If everybody knows, Cody Rhodes is Dusty Rhodes' son. Dusty Rhodes is one of the greatest minds ever in professional wrestling. And over time, Dusty was over top of NXT, so all the big stars you see right now in WWE, some in AEW, were homegrown by Dusty Rhodes. So Cody Rhodes coming back to WWE after helping to create AEW was a big story, because for him, finishing the story is becoming the world champion that his father nor his brother, who was Dustin Rhodes or Goldust, was able to accomplish. So this is a 2-year story that culminated from him coming back to essentially fighting the Bloodline the first time, coming up short at WrestleMania, to now finishing the story, which coincided with Roman Reigns' 1,316-day undisputed world championship reign coming to an end. It's been the hottest story in pro wrestling for over the past 2 years. So this culmination, and for it to happen in Philadelphia, after them kind of billing Cody Rhodes as the Rocky Balboa, was a huge deal, and it paid off for WrestleMania and WWE because it did numbers.
Nice. Now, there were a number of different stories that culminated at WrestleMania 40, including Sami Zayn's win. Talk to me about that.
Sami is a fan favorite. Sami is an amazing, amazing character. Ironically, he was a part of the Bloodline story also. He's one of the men that Roman defeated on his way and was one of Roman's best matches during that run. Now, Sami came up against another streak, which is against Gunther. Now, Gunther, up until that point in time, had been, well, still is, the greatest intercontinental champion ever. The longest reign, the greatest reign.
So just hold on, amazing. Greater than the Ultimate Warrior.
Greater than the Ultimate Warrior. Ultimate Warrior don't touch Gunther.
Greater than Kerry Von Erich.
Greater than Kerry Von Erich. Okay. Greater than Razor Ramon, another Intercontinental Champion, Steve Austin. There's no Intercontinental Champion, if you ask anyone, who has had a greater reign than Gunther, and he's been dominant. So when Sami Zayn came up against Gunther, this wasn't the first time they had faced off, and this is literally the ultimate David versus Goliath matchup, because no one expected Sami to even be able to pull this out. But it's well-deserved. It further establishes Sami Zayn as a main event talent that he's pretty much proven over the past few years. And he's another Dusty Rhodes, one of Dusty Rhodes' kids in NXT. Now, the good, the funny thing about this voice is, with Gunther losing the Intercontinental Championship, he may be coming after Cody Rhodes next. So it's going to be interesting to see over these next couple weeks. It's exciting, everything going on right now.
Okay. Something else that people are really excited about is the Triple H era. What makes Paul Levesque being in the driver's seat so important and such a draw for wrestling fans?
The Triple H era is the culmination of everything that you've seen Triple H do in his career, being the co-creator of D-Generation X, co-leading the Attitude Era. He's literally been in an executive position, I think, for well over 20 years now, and he was the catalyst for NXT. So all the great talent that you see in NXT, you can thank Triple H. This is something wrestling fans have been calling for a long time as we transition into a newer era of professional wrestling. Now, a lot of people don't like to mention the name. Vince McMahon, of course, that's kind of the boogeyman name as of right now. But when Triple H took over the first time last summer, you saw the changes that were made. You saw the excitement that happened. You saw the people who were starting to get the opportunities that they were getting. Already under the Triple H era, we have two first-time champions, of course, Cody Rhodes and Damian Priest, who is the first Puerto Rican champion in 50 years.
Wow.
We're seeing more and more representation over time. You're seeing changes from everything from the intro to how the opening is to production to everything. The Triple H era is an exciting era to be a part of. And if you're not a wrestling fan, again, this is the perfect time for you to rejoin.
I don't know about all that. I bowed out after the Monday Night Wars, and I don't know if wrestling can ever achieve those kind of heights again. But one thing that has happened recently within wrestling that I am excited about is when Jay came back to WWE, and now this whole Black Girl Magic Trio thing that that got kicked off at WrestleMania. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Now, Jay didn't, she technically did come back to WWE. She started in the Performance Center, but she debuted in AEW. So when she showed up in WWE, this was a huge thing. Now, Black Girl Magic, of course, in WWE has been prevalent for a while now. You got Naomi, who was a two-time SmackDown champion. She's actually part of the Samoan Dynasty. She's married to Jimmy Uso in real life. And then you got Bianca Belair, who is part of the first Black woman main event in WrestleMania history. Mm. And she did it with Sasha Banks. They actually earned an ESPY for it. So these three Black women, you have Naomi, who's the elder statesman, who literally has come back to WWE after a year of putting TNA over the top as a champion. She was a champion for a full year, and their ratings went crazy when she arrived. She was a catalyst for that. You got Bianca Belair, who is the ultimate star inside and outside of the ring. And then you got Jade Cargill, who is just phenomenal. I mean, for me, it's like your favorite Thanksgiving meal when you get the greens, the yams, and the macaroni and cheese together, and it just culminates. It was an ultimate show of literally Black magic. And you saw it through the tweets. You saw it through people's reactions. And on top of that, they faced a three-woman team also that is history-making in itself. You had Asuka, you had Kairi Sane, and then you had Io Sky. Oh, man, it's on the tip of my tongue. But you had three individuals there also who have made a great impact. I think this is something that you're going to see even more moving forward. You know, with you think about Black women in professional wrestling, you think about Jazz, you think about Jacqueline, you think about a bunch of great women. But now with this renaissance here, they're hoping that this is something that's going to be more of the norm than something that's just fly by night.
Cool, cool. Well, enough of this pro wrestling talk. We can come off the top turnbuckle to start things off. Now let's get into that real fight. The reason
now we come in from the top turnbuckle to go into potential scandal, because John Jones is back in the news. But this time I can't say John Jones is technically to blame. Now he's accused of threatening the urine sample collector who showed up at his house and actually surprised him. Now, the woman stated that Jones was unhappy with the collection process and was initially unable to produce urine because he was shocked by them showing up. Now, this prompted her to suggest a blood test voice, and this is according to a police report that said that Jones actually picked up the woman's phone off a surface and started recording the interaction. Officer Miguel Stanley said in his portion of the report that he reviewed the video on the woman's phone to show that it does exist. Now, it captured the mixed martial artist saying some things that we are not going to state on this show because we are not trying to get kicked off. She stated that the fighter got in her face and said, "Why do you come to people's houses so early? Do you know what happens to people who come to my house? They end up dead." Now, with all this going on, of course, John Jones was able to produce a video on his Instagram which shows complete opposite. It shows him actually walking out with the urine sampler and literally giving her a high five on the way out the door. Voice, what are we to make of this? And is John Jones this time literally getting the short end of the stick, or is this just a misunderstanding?
Because of how things have died down, I wouldn't say he's got the short end of the stick. It's more of a misunderstanding. First, let me say that a part of the news that broke with this is that the UFC has someone in place doing drug testing since they let go of USADA. I believe the name of the company is like Drug Free or something of that nature. I'm just glad that they're randomly testing people. That is a great big positive. John, if he said what he said, I could see how she may have been triggered and concerned. John Jones has video online of him chasing people with AK-47s off of his property, right there at the garage that they were at when he was given the what's name. It's like people die. It's like, this dude chasing people with AK-47 or a shotgun. It was something big enough to scare you. This is the same guy that drives around drunk with guns and gets pulled over by the police, sitting still, gets pulled over because he's just shooting out the window. And he's drunk. It's noticed, he's drunk because they just got done having a party for a friend. I would be a little concerned too if those words came out of his mouth. Now, the whole situation at the end with them high-fiving and all of that good stuff made things seem a little Karen-ish. And more than Karen-ish, looked as if she was looking for a payday. But then the information came out. Now, all of a sudden, it was like, no, she didn't file anything. Oh, but she's going to file something. Haven't heard anything about things being filed ever since that video came out, though. So take it for what it's worth. I'm just glad that things turned out the way that they did, because with John Jones and these kind of situations, usually they turn out much differently.
Definitely. But shout out to John Jones also for showing that footage, showing like he was more calm than that, because he has created that for himself in many cases, but this time, I'm glad to see that cooler heads prevail. Now we're going to go ahead and we got some great things to get into. Now, before we move on, I want to state Dakota Kai was the third wrestler's name. Apologize to her. She's an amazing, amazing wrestler. Dakota Kai. I don't want to butcher that because Dakota's really dope. Now, we're going to take a quick break and get into that Ozell brand. When we come back, UFC 300. We're going to get into it.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
It's not just about the love of the game. It's about dedication and commitment through the process and the patience to endure. There's joy in reaching your goals and peace in knowing you've done all you're supposed to do. Ozell Brand. It's not just a brand. It's a lifestyle.
Shout out to the sponsor, man, Ozell Brand. It's not just a brand. It's a lifestyle. Make sure you get your
lifestyle.
Make sure you get your sneakers together. Make sure you get them baseball cleats. I know baseball season coming up. Spring football. Shout out to Ozell Brand. Thanks for being a sponsor and an amazing company overall. Now, Voice, we've been talking about this for weeks. UFC 300 is here, Voice. Yes. And UFC 300 has an amazing card. But already, Voice, it kind of feels like there's a difference between the main event for this event and many of the bigger championship main events of the past. The key word, respect. Now, so far, Alex Pereira and Jamahal Hill have been opposite of many of the championship fights in the past, and that there have not been a lot of pre-fight back and forth fireworks. Instead, there's actually been a lot of respect and admiration between the two. From Sweet Dream actually seeking out Alex and asking about the meaning of Pereira's famous chama usage. I know I'm butchering that because I can't remember how he says it. To asking for an autograph and even getting the current champ to sign a hoodie. So when he was asked about it, he literally stated, "I just want to make sure I get my memorabilia together because it's going to be epic." Now, when asked about the lightweight challenger by ESPN, Alex used the word heart. He was speaking a lot about what makes Sweet Dream stand out, stating, "Sometimes it doesn't matter if you're the most technical or most experienced guy, if you don't have enough cardio or if you don't have enough heart. Jamahal has shown to everybody that he has a lot of heart from his fights. And Alex has literally studied those fights, and he definitely respects that." Now, in kickboxing, he stated, "I've had fights with athletes who didn't have that much experience, but they have strength. They have the will to win, the determination, right? I think these people are the most difficult to beat. Jamahal is that guy who has a lot of that, especially determination." Now, he noted that in such a crazy and dramatic sport as MMA, heart and determination can often be the deciding factor of the outcome of a bout, or at least more so over experience and mileage. Now, both fighters literally come into this bout almost, depending on who you ask, with a technical claim, Voice, to be the champ. Now, Alex won the UFC middleweight title by knocking out Israel Adesanya before moving up in weight, actually losing the title to Israel Adesanya before moving up in weight and winning his current belt by doing the same thing to Yuri last November. Now, Jamahal is literally on a 4-fight win streak, and he has finished those 3 fights during the run that literally culminated with him without pointing Glover Teixeira. Now, this was over 5 rounds, and he became that champion in January 2023. Now, we got to remember, an injury forced Jamahal to relinquish his belt that he now feels like he has to come back to get. Ironically about this, Voice, Jamahal defeated Glover Teixeira, who's currently working with Alex in his camp for preparation. Now, although he hasn't fought since 283, like we stated, Hill is a winner of 3 or 4, and 3 of those coming by KO. Meanwhile, Alex Pereira is 3-1 in his last 4, including winning the vacant lightweight title at UFC 295. Now, Voice, you know, this is an amazing fight between 2 great fighters. I love seeing the respect here. But what should we expect from these 2 once they get in that cage and they lock in?
You should expect a knockdown, drag out war for as long as it happens. Both of these fighters are supreme strikers. Alex having the advantage because of being a kickboxing champion. But Jamahal's nickname is earned. You know, some are given, some are earned. His is earned because he gives people those sweet dreams or beautiful nightmares, depending on how that time in where you are separated from consciousness ends. What is so interesting about this fight to me, though, you touched on it. Jamahal Hill won the title defeating Glover Teixeira. Glover Teixeira was fighting for the title because he had just recently lost to Jiří Prochazka, who could not fight because of injury, so he relinquished his belt, much like Jamahal did when he got injured. Who did Jiří beat for the title, though? He beat Glover for the title. Who did Alex beat for the title? He beat Yuri Prochazka. So this is like a real life martial arts movie where the pupil is coming back to avenge his master, but avenge him again. It's like, you took out my master, you took out my master. You know, so now I got to take out both of you all. So I love that aspect of the story. This is the sixth champion in a row that Alex will face. Seven fights, six champions, because he fought Izzy twice. You were right. Beat him the first time. Second time, he got knocked out, and then he moved up to light heavyweight. When Glover lost to Hill, he said, "That's okay. I'm retiring. Alex is going to come in and take care of things for me." And sure enough, he has done that. At least he did it with Yuri. Can he do it with Hill? I'm interested in seeing how all this is going to play out, because Alex knows Jamal from having prepared Glover for the fight and working his corner at the fight. So he's got knowledge of him. One thing that we don't really see in Jamal's game, though, is a ground game. He may want to try to use it this time. He's got a brown belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Now, when you hear Black Lion jiu-jitsu, it's like, okay, that's jiu-jitsu, but is it Brazilian jiu-jitsu? Then you look at the team's other name, aka Coyola Gracie, BJJ all day long. But you never see that from him. Can and will he try to mix the martial arts and lean on that Brazilian jiu-jitsu being Hill? Will it matter, seeing as Alex trains with Glover, who is a master in BJJ? There are so many different points like this that need to be answered. Even on the whole submission end, the only loss that Hill has had was by submission. So maybe he didn't want to take it to the ground because maybe his ground game is not where it needs to be for MMA. I don't know. I know that he needs to look out for the hooks and the kicks of Alex. I know that for sure. There are going to be so many questions answered. The one question that will definitely be answered, and one that I feel confident will be answered affirmatively, is that it is going to be a phenomenal fight.
I mean, the anticipation has been, you know, it's exciting for it. It's great to see Jamal back in the cage, especially after that, when we talked about that on a previous episode of the main card. And Alex Pereira is a common name that comes on in the main card, so that's going to be exciting. But it's literally only the beginning. Now, yeah, it's the main event of the card, but voice, the BMF title is up for grabs in one of the most exciting bouts that people are looking forward to. For the first time since UFC 291, the BMF title is going to be on the card, and the man known as the highlight is going to be taking place in that bout. Now, ironically, he believes as great of a bout that the bout is going to be between him and Max Holloway. Gaethje believes that if he was not on the card, voice, he would definitely be watching the bout. He recently said, "If I was not on this card, I would be in attendance. I don't see a better card on pay-per-view. We're starting with Cody versus Figueiredo. For that time, for it to be the first fight of the early prelims, is going to be crazy and a fan's dream, and I'm happy to be a part of it." Now, regarding that bout, their bout, Gaethje versus Holloway, Holloway is going to be competing in his first lightweight bout since losing to Dustin Poirier in 2019. And Poirier, of course, is the man who Gaethje defeated in July to become the BMF champion. So this is almost kind of a retry for Holloway.
Yeah.
Now, both Gaethje and Holloway have won two in a row. So someone's streak, voice, is coming to an end. But Gaethje stated, "Listen, I'm prepared for five rounds. You never know what's going to happen. I've been focused on my cardio, and if it does go into the later rounds, I'll be fresh enough to perform. I'm ready for high volumes, and I'm ready for five rounds." Voice, I mean, the BMF title, yeah, most people don't recognize it as a real title, but it seems like anytime Gaethje gets into ring for this, he goes hard. And Max Holloway, of course, man, at 25-7, he's had some amazing fights himself, and this is kind of a redemption fight for him. What should we look for in this bout, and who needs this one more?
what we should look for in this bout is potentially the fight of the year. And it's because it is for the BMF. In order to fight for the BMF, you got to be somebody who brings it. Both of these fighters bring it every single time that they enter the octagon. Max is durable, has a great chin, is known for his high volume. I mean, he set the record, and I think even broken the record that he set for most significant strikes landed. The question for him, though, is, has age caught up to him? You know, will he be able to continue to do these things? Now, one thing that is very interesting about this, you spoke about the fight that he had against Poirier for the interim title back in 2019. That fight was phenomenal. It got overshadowed by the fact that Izzy and Kelvin Gastelum came right behind it and had the fight of the year. But that was a great fight between them. And, you know, Holloway hung in there and hung tough, did not get knocked out, which is something that Gaethje can't say happened when he fought Poirier the first time. So you've got those storylines going. And the one thing that is most important about this, or most intriguing, is that this time Max isn't just a 145 pounder who's fighting at 155. No, he's put on weight for this fight. He has bulked up to be truly at the 155 range. So, you know, how is that going to impact his durability? You know, is he going to be stronger because he's not cutting weight? Is he going to be able to have that same volume because he's carrying more weight? Where Gaethje, he's powerful, he's violent, he can keep, can he keep up the pace? He was talking about I'm ready to go. You better be ready to go, because Max is going to be ready to go, and Max is not going to stop. He is the definition of BMF. He's like, look, I'm a gladiator. Gladiators fight to the death, and I'm coming in here to fight to the death. So he better be able to keep up the pace. Will the accumulation of punishment be too much for Gaethje? Will Max take it to the ground? That's a place that we don't really see Gaethje that often. And much of that is because of his ability to keep it standing upright because of his wrestling background. Yeah, this fight has the potential to be not just the fight of the night, not just the fight of the month or the quarter, but the fight of the year. And I'm here for it, and I can't wait. I'm more excited about this fight than any other title fight on this card.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's definitely going to be exciting. And if the thing about it is, Voice, if Justin can create the same type of performance that he did before, this is literally going to be another performance of the night for him. I'm looking forward to literally just hearing about them two go back and forth. I want to see it go five rounds. I'm hoping it goes five rounds just for the fans on an already stat card. Now, ironically, Voice, that's not even the co-main event.
It's not.
Now, in what UFC is billing as an historic all-China title fight for the UFC Women's Strawweight Championship, Magnum is facing off against Fury. That's right. This is going to be happening in the co-main event of the stacked UFC 300 bout, when you see Zhang Weili versus Yan Shonan in the T-Mobile Arena. Oh, man, I've been practicing that, man. Now, this is another great fight, according to Yan. But on the other hand, she stated, this also means so much for the MMA sports development and growth in China. Now, Zhang, who has been champion since regaining the title at UFC 281, is looking to not only continue the growth of China with MMA, but also create a greater legacy for herself. Now, in a memorable moment with her fourth consecutive performance of the night, which she had done her last three bouts, where she's 3-0. Now, for Magnum, she's not only coming in as the underdog, Voice. I'm sorry, for Fury, she's not only coming in as the underdog, but she's looking to upset the more popular Zhang after what many felt was her surprise KO against Jessica Andrade. And she stated, there's still more people supporting her, but I have my family, my friends, and my coaching team supporting me. All my people are going to be there, and that's enough. Zhang is a great fighter, and every fight she knows how to stop everybody. but I also believe I'm a good fighter, and I think I will show you guys the best version of myself and come home as champion. Voice, this is two amazing fighters who are setting, who are literally creating history for UFC. UFC is literally creating so much buzz around this in their hopes of gaining even more traction in China with MMA fans, not just the men, but also on the women's side because of what these two great women are able to do. What do you think about the historic principles of this overall, and what should we be looking forward to in this fight also, which is our co-main event for the night in an already stacked card?
The historic nature of it, I'm glad you asked about that, because that is very important. Yan Xiaonan, I believe, is the first female from China to fight in the UFC. But Zhang Weili has stated that many Chinese fighters took interest in MMA because of her becoming champion, which that happened in China. So that makes sense. Usually when you have those kinds of seminal moments, that's when you see a boom in things. The UFC has a performance institute there in China. And there are many, many females, you know, in China as well, because of the one child rule. You know, a lot of times, you know, they went to have children, and all they could have was one child, and it wound up being a girl. So, you know, how that's going to work out, that's going to be, you know, interesting. All the women that are fighting, because there are other female fighters in China. The champion for one championship, she's also Chinese. So you got a bubbling a hotbed of martial arts, literally. I mean, it's like the birthplace of martial arts, at least the martial arts that we, the way that we know them. And then you have these Chinese fighters, China on China. Don't let Yan Xiaonan win. You know they're gonna run it back in China. You know, there's so much to gain here for the UFC and for MMA because of this fight happening. Now, how the fight will play out, that's the question. I believe that Yan has only been stopped once. If she's been stopped more than once, then I'm wrong.
Yeah. But
I know her last stoppage, though, was in a loss to Carla Esparza, who did Zhang Weili beat for the championship? Carla Esparza.
Actually, that was Marina Rodriguez.
Marina Rodriguez.
Okay. Yeah, she had back-to-back losses. You're right about Carla Esparza, but she was first.
Then okay,
she and then again at UFC 272.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that was at least her first stoppage loss in the UFC. So, again, she's the one who did it. How did she do it? She did it via crucifix. Now, is Weili the same kind of grappler that Carla Esparza is? No. But does she have a ground game and a ground game strong enough to make it an easy night? Probably. You know, training with Henry Cejudo and the Pitbull brothers and people of that nature, she's probably got that. I mean, the woman just on a humbug picked up Francis Ngannou. So, you know, she's strong. You know, she's got she's got some grappling ability. Yan said, hey, I shook up the world. She definitely did. When she knocked out Andrade, because, you know, she wins, but, you know, she only has maybe about seven or so knockouts on her record. Most of her wins come by decision. So that happening, we thought if anybody got knocked out in that fight, that it'd be Yan getting knocked out by Andrade. Can lightning strike twice? Can she knock out a champion again in this second fight in a row? We won't know until the pin drops, the cage door locks, the thumbs go up, and they start the clock.
The voice, you are literally the voice of a generation when it comes to this, because I'm excited for it. Now, one great thing that you stated about Jean and her knockouts, she does have 8 knockouts, but before her KO against Jessica, she had not had a KO or submission win since 2016. Mm-hmm. So she's going to do this. She's going to be doing this from a state of shock that's going to catch a lot of people off guard. So it's going to be incredible to see. That's going to be the co-main event for UFC 300. So just think about that. We only gave you three matches, man. And there's so many more matches on there. Voice, give us your last words, whether it be on UFC 300 or any other bouts that we should be looking forward to this upcoming weekend.
Well, we're going to start with UFC 300 because quite possibly, or at least on paper, this is the best fight card ever. You've got from the very first fight, you have two former champions going at it. And Davison Figueiredo, who's making his, I believe he's making his bantamweight debut, taking on former champion Cody Garbrandt. You see the people on the screen right now. You know your man, The Voice, loves Nigerians. And Sadiq Youssef is holding it down, not just for Nigeria, but for Yoruba people all over the globe. You have the debut of Kayla Harrison in the UFC. If that wasn't exciting enough, she's fighting at 135, a weight class she's never fought at before. Look at her on this picture. Look at how ripped she is, how her muscles, she got muscles on top of muscles. Her muscles got muscles. And she's going to be fighting Holly Holm, former champion in her first fight. And that's on the undercard. That's not even on the main card. Who is on the main card? Bo Nickel, who is being touted as being the next up when it comes to wrestling, or I should say high-level wrestlers that have transitioned into MMA. He's got a favorable touch in Cody Brundage, but you know, anything can happen. And if Brundage were to defeat the mighty Bo Nickel, man, it would be absolutely amazing. Now, those are just some of the fights, but there are 12 different champions or former champions fighting on this card. If you go to the next image, producer, 12 either current or former champions fighting. We already talked about Cody and Davison and Holly. You know, Justin Gaethje is a BMF champ and a former interim champ. Charles Oliveira, I ain't talk about him. He's fighting Armand Sarukian. Crazy fight. Absolutely crazy fight. You got so many champions that are fighting on this card, which is why on paper, this is the best fight card ever. But then on top of all that, you still got other fights going on over this time frame. On Saturday, while UFC 300 is going on ESPN, you got boxing. You got Jared Anderson taking on Riyad Mahery. And I probably butcher both of his names. And if he defeats Anderson, then this is going to come back to bite me. And he has a chance to defeat Anderson. We know in his last fight, Anderson, when he was fighting Charles Martin, that touching viral clip between him and Roy Jones Jr. He was like, I didn't ask for the pressure. It's like, yeah, but you got it. You know, and you're going to need to step up to handle the pressure. He did against Martin. That was a very hard-fought fight. But he said that the biggest fight is outside of the ring. And outside of the ring, Anderson has been taking L's. He got arrested in November after a traffic stop because he was driving under the influence and had a firearm. And then 2 months later, he's allegedly leading police on a chase that ended with Anderson crashing his car. Has the pressure caught up with him? Will it now show in the ring? This is why you will want to turn in, or I should say tune in, to the fight. You know, have both your screens going. Don't miss 300. And watch 300 from the beginning to the end. I'm going to do that. And this is the first time in a long time that I've sat down for the whole fight card. But I'm doing that this time. Yeah, but check out that Anderson fight on your other screen, because that should be bananas. But that's not all. PFL is having their second fight card on Friday. I was thinking about this today, preparing for the show. This was a stroke of genius. You got the light heavyweights and the heavyweights fighting. PFL is known for having other fighters come over to their fights and be in the crowd or even talking on camera, a la John Jones a couple times. This fight is on Friday in Vegas. Where's UFC 300? In Vegas. What's going to happen on Friday in Vegas regarding UFC 300? The weigh-ins. When you get done with the weigh-ins, what are you going to do? Let's hop on. I'm excited, you know, because they got me all geeked at the weigh-ins. Let's go watch some fights. You telling me that of all 13 fights on this card, that nobody has teammates that are fighting in the PFL on that Friday? Come on. So you get that rub of UFC 300 being there in Vegas as well for the fight. You got people like Alex Polizzi for Sheezy, who I got to talk to here in St. Louis when he was with Bellator, making his PFL debut against Epica Song and I. You got Clay Collard, who made a name for himself during COVID with all the boxing matches that he's had, you know, and he's faced champions like Showtime Pettis. Now he's facing another former champion in Patricky Pitbull. Oh, and by the way, PFL shared some information with me today. The Iceman, Chuck Liddell, and Vegas resident Roy Big Country Nelson will be in the building at PFL 2. You know where else the Iceman is going to be this weekend? At UFC 300. Why? Because Glover was his main training partner, and he's already been on Embedded at Powhatan's training camp. So this is just a smart move marketing-wise by the PFL, who's on ESPN and ESPN Plus, same place you're going to find the UFC this weekend. It was a stroke of genius, and I can't wait to see these fights as well.
Well, Voice, if you're this excited about these fights, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you are following The Voice on social media, on X. If he's watching all these bouts, you're going to get the spiciest takes ever. Make sure you comment. Make sure you say what you need to say to him. He's going to be talking about the fights in between the rounds. Let him know what you all think. It's going to be an amazing, amazing weekend for combat sports. Thank you all for tuning in. It's MTMV Sports. This is literally what we do. We are the fans. The only difference is we try to take it a step further for y'all and just give us your thoughts. You can follow us on all major platforms where you do your podcasting. So if you can't see these handsome faces, take us with you and listen to us. Our voices are soothing. You might be able to take a nap afterwards, you know, because I heard that my voice is very welcoming. Mm. Yeah. I'm a great host.
Make sure. Yes, you are. You're all those things and just want to share with the people. Go subscribe on Spotify. If you got Spotify, go subscribe there. You can hear it. Yeah, Apple, Spotify, wherever the podcasts are. But on Spotify, you get both the visual and the audio there. So just a plug for that platform specifically.
And make sure you're following us also on YouTube. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe on YouTube. We always appreciate the support. 7:15, it's Smoke O'Clock. We love y'all. We thank y'all. Shout out to the amazing producer for producing another great show. My amazing, amazing host and the combat sports connoisseur, The Voice. Voice, take us out, sir.
Until next time, fight the good fight. What's good, everybody? It's your man, the myth, the legend, The Voice. Thanks so much for tuning into this show on MTMV Sports Network. For more exciting content just like this, subscribe, like, and share.